on September 9th and 10th, 2005. A conference on war-affected children took place at the University of Winnipeg. The main focus was children around the world whose lives were changed and still are to this day due to wars in their native countries. In this first part, you are going to hear a speech given by Olara Utunu, a former UN Special Representative for Children and Armed Conflict. Mr. Utunu was one of the key speakers of the conference, and here's what he had to say.
When we speak of war-affected children, who are we referring to? It's very important to keep in view all the major categories of children who are victims of war. Children who are displaced, some of whom are now in your midst. Children who are denied the opportunity of schooling and education. The millions of children who die as a result of direct and indirect consequence of war from very banal causes and diseases because of the conditions created by war. Millions just in Eastern Congo alone, the work that has been done by the International Rescue Committee. Young girls in particular who are targeted for violation, for sexual abuse and violence as part of the stratagem of today's warfare. The trauma that children inherit even when the guns are gone silent, so many children, because they have been exposed to years of violence, inherit and inhabit that trauma within them. The children who are maimed, some killed outright as a result of landmines planted across the landscape. A lot of part of Lloyd Axworthy's work and part of his legacy as foreign minister was pioneering very specific, decisive action on the issue of landmines. Children are killed and maimed by landmines. And of course, that particularly unacceptable use and exploitation of children to fight the wars of adults. Children being used as child soldiers. These are some of the faces of children who are victims of armed conflict. And it's very important that we keep in view all these faces, all these dimensions, because all these children need support, protection, and relief. Quite often we speak mainly about child soldiers, the last category I referred to, but a broader group of children who are being destroyed in situations of war, and they all need our support, they need relief, they need protection. Secondly, let me say that when discussing the impact of war on children, we are talking about how to provide space for their protection, how to make children, if you like, a zone of peace in the midst of conflict. When we can't prevent conflict, when we have failed to prevent conflict, we still have the obligation and responsibility to protect children in the midst of ongoing conflict. So the obligation of protection in the midst of ongoing conflict. But equally important is when the war has ended, as in Sierra Leone, or in Liberia, in Afghanistan, in the Balkans, Timor Leste, how to ensure that any programs of reconstruction, rebuilding, and healing will focus on children. That we shall invest in children, in their education, in their recreation, in their healing, wholesome healing, and make them again productive, active members of society. So our concern must be both in the midst of conflict, and equally important, the rehabilitation that must take place in post-conflict situation. What is the magnitude of this problem? What's the magnitude of this? Well, the magnitude is mind-boggling, in fact. I don't want to confuse you with any statistics. For one thing, most of the statistics are very approximative. They are not very precise, and I don't want to get into that. But it's huge and massive enough, without arguing precisely whether it is 10 million in this category, or 7 million, or just 5 million. There are huge numbers of children we're talking about. If we take situations of ongoing conflict, it is probably at least in 35 countries as we meet here today that children are being destroyed by wars. If then we bring in the second category of the challenge of rehabilitation in post-conflict situation, then we are talking easily of 50 countries altogether. And in each of the categories of child victims, millions of children are what we are talking about. So the magnitude is huge. We are engaged in a process of self-destruction, the destruction of the futures of many societies around the globe. Now, is this phenomenon something new, all the same, or has it changed? Well, children being exploited and brutalized in situations of conflict is perhaps not entirely new. It is as old as the phenomenon of conflict itself. What I think is relatively new is the fact that this should now be the mainstay of the phenomenon of conflict. That we've shifted from a situation where children may be the victims of wayward groups, of those who've gone out of line here and there. Children and women have become the mainstay, the main victims of conflict. It's, if you like, conflict situations where the very target of conflict are the civilian populations, and the core of that, the most vulnerable, children and women. It is also the fact that most of the conflicts in the world today are not international conflicts. They are not conflicts that range the army of country X against the army of country Y. Most of them are brothers against brothers, sisters against sisters, the fracturing of a country, of a society, the so-called civil wars. And unlike perhaps even the First or Second World Wars, which lasted for a few years, we are talking of conflicts which are lasting for decades. For decades. Take Colombia, it's been going on for more than 40 years. Angola was 30 years before the war ended. Sudan, the war began in 1956, ended briefly in the 70s, and resumed until today. So we're talking about conflicts which are going on for decades. And within this context, situations in which very few of those who are presiding over war efforts have complete control over the situations in which they are operating. So the situation of chaos and almost ethical vacuum in which anything goes. And the softer the target, the better. The softer target means essentially children and women. These features are relatively new, and they have therefore produced a qualitative shift in the very nature of warfare, which explains the preponderance of children and women as the victims of warfare, and therefore the need for particular action that is focusing on them. In terms of the response of the international community, systematic response focusing on children is something that is new. It dates back, actually, perhaps to the commissioning of Madame Graca Machel by the United Nations to conduct a special study, the study entitled Impact of Armed Conflict on Children. And that is what launched the effort of the international community to respond in a much more focused, systematic way on the impact of war on children. And over the last several years, a lot has been done. I will not go into that. I'll speak perhaps about that tomorrow morning. But let me just say that we've gone from a situation of raising awareness to developing standards, conventions, protocol, rules, resolutions, to integrating children and focusing on them in peace processes and post-conflict situation. But we've now arrived at a very particular stage, which is only actually a few weeks old. What one might call the era of application, which is to say, applying on the ground in northern Uganda, in Sudan, in Colombia, in Sri Lanka, the standards and rules which have been agreed upon internationally. A few weeks ago, the entrance into this year of application was marked by a very important development at the United Nations. The Security Council of the United Nations, the international hub of peace and security, endorsed a number of measures that translate into what one might call a compliance regime, which defines this year of application. And the key elements within this regime are the following. The Security Council has endorsed now a practice, systematic practice, by which offending parties, those who are violating children, using them as child soldiers, abducting them, attacking schools and hospitals, can now be identified, named, and their names publicized. It's a naming and shaming exercise, if you like, systematically and in very specific terms, indicating what violations these parties are responsible for. And already, if you look at the last report of the Security Council, you see some 54 such parties identified and named across the globe. That's one element of this compliance regime. A second element is a very comprehensive and very specific monitoring reporting mechanism by which from the ground level, let's say if you take the Congo, you know, what is happening in Eastern Congo, information would be gathered, vetted, taken up the national level in Kinshasa with the UN task force and NGOs working together, and they would take that information to the UN headquarters in New York, where this would be put together and then taken to the Security Council for action. For the Security Council to act against the parties against whom specific information has been gathered about violation. So then we move from general condemnation, general call for compliance, to accountability and action that should follow that accountability as a specific structured formal monitoring reporting mechanism is being put in place. Thirdly, the third element of this compliance regime is the fact that the Security Council has now ordered the offending parties, as we speak there are 54 of them, that they should immediately, working with the UN country teams, come up with action plans that indicate what measures they will be taking to end the violations for which they have been cited. But within this time frame, we will not be recruiting children, we will have stopped all recruitment and use of children, to allow access to their accounts, to give a time frame for the release of these children, to have benchmarks that can monitor and work out how much compliance is taking place with these measures. So very specific, time-bound action plans. Again, we are not talking generalities anymore. And then finally, to indicate the Security Council's own determination of seriousness, the Council has constituted for the first time a working group, a committee of the Council, which will be following up, monitoring these measures and what action is being taken to implement these measures. And the Council has signaled that those parties that remain recalcitrant, that do not follow up on these measures, may then face the consequence of sanctions measures being slapped against them. So these together make up the compliance regime. This is the first time, incidentally, outside of the issue of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, the very first time that the Security Council has taken this kind of measure, this kind of protection, monitoring, compliance measures within the Security Council. Let me say finally that what is so important in our discussion today is to be clear and to realize that we are not talking here about a utopian project. We are talking about an abomination, something completely unacceptable, the destruction of innocent children, the destruction of the future of these societies. But there are, in fact, specific measures, concrete measures that can be taken to reverse this situation. That's why I've been talking in specific terms, not in generalities. We are in a position, meaning the international community, at every level, this university, the NGOs that are active in Canada, the United Nations, governments, international organizations like regional groups and the Security Council. We are in a position today because of the standards and rules which have been put in place, because of the institutional mechanisms which are there, and because of the means of pressure which exist, we are in a position to reverse this trend of abomination against children. And I hope that our discussion today will make a very important and concrete contribution to that exercise. Thank you very much.
You have listened to a speech given by Olara Otunnu, a former UN Special Representative for Children and Armed Conflict. Mr. Otunnu was one of the key speakers at the War Affected Children Conference, which took place on September 9th and 10th, 2005, at the University of Winnipeg. My name is Bojan Dulabic, and you are listening to CKUW's The Beat, 95.9 FM Winnipeg.